Beard, even though you're back in Seattle, I'm going to take you into New York. This is the most New York moment you're really going to have. We're hanging outside the hotel right now, live. Don't worry, it's a suicide window. But down below, there's lots of people from New York, and mostly cabs. Welcome to New York, Beard. Okay, I gotta go grab my internet phone because this is relevant to the show. Have you guys heard the news? See, if Noah, if you hadn't slept in, you would have had a good laugh at my expense today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the end of the meet and greet here at the Ubuntu rally was a huge warning to all iPhone 7 users. For real. So we're here, Noah and I are here in New York City at the Ubuntu rally. Maybe we can talk more about that in a minute, but first we got to keep this relevant to me. And all iPhone 7 users with iOS 10 need to update ASAP.
Okay.
I was going to play it safe, and I was just going to go through the whole trip, and then I would update leisurely when I got home. You know, like just make sure everything works okay for the road trip. Mm-hmm. I don't need to play with a new Shiny. I just need my phone to work.
Right.
And so I'm sitting there, and I'm filming. I think I got this on camera, too. I'm sitting there, and I'm filming, and I'm just doing like a wide shot of the room, but I have the mic on.
Sure.
And as they're wrapping up, he says, and just a note to all iPhone 7 users, you need to immediately update to iOS 11. There is a zero-day exploit in the Wi-Fi firmware that is being actively exploited in this hotel and is going after canonical Wi-Fi network names.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Did you ask? Excuse me, I just wanted clarification. Canonical, the company that is making the Canonical Ubuntu phone? So that shouldn't be much of an issue, right?
So everybody, you know, everybody got a good laugh out of it. But yeah, so then I went up to the room here, and I looked it up. And it was Project Zero, Google's zero-day, like, strike team that finds some of these incredible vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. I think it was them that found this, and it is a issue in the Broadcom firmware on the Wi-Fi chip in the iPhone 7. And you can just get in there, and you can permanently write to the firmware of the Broadcom chip.
Wow.
You can put your code in there permanently.
Wow.
And
that's crazy.
Yeah. And so right now, there's no fix for iOS 10, so you just have to upgrade to iOS 11.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm doing right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm doing it right now, because I mean, that they're actively exploiting people in the hotel here. They're going after people in the hotel, so like, I can't be that guy, right? I'll be on a wall of shame. So, yeah. I plugged it in, and now I got to do the big upgrade.
What Chris doesn't know is, while he was downstairs, I have secretly taken control of his Broadcom chip and wrote my firmware.
Yeah,
that pops up in AltaSpeed
pretty much
randomly throughout the day.
I feel like I was like, normally I used to be that guy that I, you know, if a new release of Ubuntu came out while I was here at the hotel, I would upgrade. If a new iOS came out, I'd upgrade. Like, I, you know, what do I care?
Right.
I can fight through any particular challenges.
Exactly.
But now, you know,
you're an LTS guy now.
Well, I'm more and more. You know, I mean, I'm driving. I'm in New York. It's like, it's just not a good time for like something to go wrong.
Yeah,
you know, it's just not a good time. So I was not gonna do the update. But freaking, like, how localized, like, you know, we talk about these zero days all the time. Yeah, yeah. And they're always like these conceptual things, and I'm always going on about Android zero days because God knows there's a litany of them,
right?
And then when it actually hits me, it's me on an iPhone in a hotel.
Jeez.
I tell you what.
Yeah, well, I mean, you are in New York, the heart of the world.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that, and I actually had crossed my mind if I should just maybe while I'm here turn off my Bluetooth and Wi-Fi.
Really?
I guess that's the other workaround, by the way. Instead of going to iOS 11, you can just turn off your Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah. That's real great.
So it's
Wi-Fi connected phone.
It's probably any device. The people are talking about the iPhone right now because that's what Project Zero targeted, but it's going to be any mobile device that uses the BCM 4355C0 chip with a certain like version of the firmware 9.44 or older. And if you've got that on, it could be an Android device, too.
Yeah, right.
It's just the iPhone's one they're talking about this morning, because this is, as we record this episode, this is breaking news as of like 3 hours ago.
Sure.
It's issue 1289 on the Chromium bug tracker, which is where Project Zero submits bugs, I believe.
Huh. You know, I wonder if it's an interesting thing, because the firmware for that chip is obviously going to be handled by the software platform, right? And so, you know, if Apple decided, they said, well, we'll hang back a couple firmware versions, we're going to hang back here, and everyone else said, well, we'll ship the current, you know, the current, or maybe they were one or two firmware versions newer, you know, it would kind of depend.
It looks like, iOS 11 handles certain symbols that go into the firmware differently. And so this exploit is requires successful execution of a particular version of the firmware that will accept typical types of symbols. I mean, I barely understand it, but it sounds like it's like a very specific kind of flaw. So it might be unique to iOS and iPhone 7 only, but it seems like this particular type of attack going after the Wi-Fi chipset could be a more used attack vector?
Yeah, yeah.
Because everybody's phones are scanning for Wi-Fi all the frickin' time.
Right.
And they've all got firmware on them. Yeah. And it's, some of it just runs totally independent of the OS.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense.
Oh, man. Good times.
Yeah, it's now I am disappointed. Now, you see, if I would have known, if you would have told me there was an opportunity to give you crap about using an iPhone,
I know.
I would have totally got my butt out of bed and come to breakfast.
I know. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. That's where you go to support this show. And I'll tell you, talk to a few people here at Ubuntu Rally. They're big Linux Academy fans.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a good resource. It's a platform to learn more about Linux and all the things around Linux that are going to make you the monies or help you look a little better on the resume or maybe get that cert that you finally need to take. I think that when Linux Academy launched, the concept was pretty easy to understand. It's just going to be a platform to learn about Linux. Boom. Encapsulate that. Done. But then as they started going, they're like, okay, how do we actually really make this valuable? Like, how do you make a subscription valuable out of this? And that's when they started integrating things like virtual machines that spin up on demand for learning and hooking into AWS so that you don't have to go create a separate AWS account and make separate payments on that. You can just do it as part of the courseware.
Right.
Enabling things like SSH so you can SSH into these machines and work on them. Adjusting machines that match courseware and distribution choices that match the courseware and the virtual machine together. Like that kind of stuff was like they really narrowed it down on Linux users. And then they just started growing. So they added more instructors, more content creators. They expanded partnerships with lots of business and industry. And so they've grown really well-known.
Mm-hmm.
And that now is another part of the Linux Academy strategies. Now that they're becoming a really well-known, great education platform in the industry, they're using that to help people have a way to demonstrate some of the work they've done. So they've created things like public profiles where you can have like achievements and badges of the courses you've taken and completed.
See, the way to make anything succeed is turn it into a game.
Well, and you know, think about it. Like one of the things you hear a lot in for developers is my GitHub page is my resume.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is sort of along that same vein. So now it's this is my Linux Academy public profile, and this is all the courseware I've totally crushed. And you can see it, and it's right there. It's on my page, and as I complete more, it gets updated. And it's like links that you can include when you're trying. It's just like a little extra, you know, a little extra ahead that other people aren't going to have.
Yeah.
Here's a page that's from this legitimate company that's well-respected in the industry that really documents the courseware I've completed and taken.
Right. Right.
That's super nice. It's a good strategy. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. That's where you go to sign up for a free 7-day trial and support this here user error. Oh, man, we have a nice view here. Oh, this is a really nice view. I'm really appreciative of it. I mean, you don't seem that impressed.
No,
you know, that's the reflection of the Empire State Building right there.
Yep.
You know, Chris, it's no Japan.
I guess.
So legitimately, that there is something to that. When you start going outside of the U.S. and you start seeing things that are like drastically different, there is something to that.
Yeah.
The other thing is, too, is like I have been to New York numerous times. I've been coming here since I was, you know, 8 or 9 years old because my uncle lived here. So.
This is my first time.
So, yeah, that's probably why I'm not as... Although I feel like the first night when we were walking around, I was a little awestruck again.
Yeah, when we went to Times Square in the nighttime.
Well, because we have 5-story buildings. That's the tallest state we have there.
Yeah. So out our hotel window right now, I'm looking at the Salesforce building, which I didn't realize that Salesforce had an entire building. Wow, the cloud is a thing. And then off to the right is the Comcast building. And then in the reflection of the building directly in front of us is the Empire State Building, which means it's on the other side of us. And down below us is the library. Down there.
Mm-hmm.
The library that's in like Ghostbusters where they fight, you know, on the street in New York.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had a question that came into the show, a hashtag Ask Air that came in, and I thought it was kind of perfect. It's relevant to this conversation. Hashtag Ask Air. What famous spot did you go to and were disappointed in? Didn't live up to the hype.
I think I know what you're going to say.
What?
The...
Oh, yeah. So we, like, I was just, this is, I actually hadn't thought of that. But that
oh,
is,
really?
Yeah, this is exactly. So we go to, we went to Times Square the night we got here. Am I saying that right? Times Square? Yeah. Is it? Okay. And it is a light show. That is really a thing.
Don't come here if you have epilepsy.
Yeah, and I would say wait till the night. First of all, it's balls hot here. It is 85 degrees, but the humidity level combined with the moisture that comes up out of the sewers constantly, combined with all of the street vendors, combined with the piles and piles and piles and piles and piles of trash
that they just set out on the side of the street.
It is a wet 85, feels like 95.
Smelly.
Stinks. And so we waited till the evening to go to Times Square, which was a great call because it was all lit up and you can't really see the garbage. The city's way cooler at night. Mm-hmm. And then I turn around and I'm looking at this thing and I lean over to Noah. I'm like, Noah, come here. Is that the ball they drop for New Year's? Is that the Times Square? Is that little basketball there? Is that the ball? And Noah's like, no, that's not the ball. And then he's looking at it and he goes, well, I mean, it does have the 2017 year, and that looks like the right building. And then we both just sat there and went, holy shit, that thing's tiny. Like, people pack in this tiny little Times Square area to watch this baseball-sized ball come down for, like, 10 feet.
Notice the ball.
I like that every time you describe it. Yeah. Every time you describe it, it gets smaller.
Exactly. Yeah. We went from basketball to baseball. Yeah. Next is there'll be a golf ball.
That's actually where I was going to go.
It's going to be like, you know, this marble fell off.
I was going to call it a golf ball next. But it really is disappointing when you look. Like, and if you went during the daytime, you might completely miss it. Because the only way I even noticed it was lit up. And it was the same color it finally is when it stops on New Year's. It remains that color. And maybe it slowly goes back up. I mean, maybe there's something novel about it. But, like the library in Ghostbusters looks larger than life. The library here is big. I mean, it's really big.
Yeah.
But everything around it is also really big. And so, to scale, it just seems as average size as everything else.
Right.
But in the Hollywood camera in Ghostbusters, that library, or in the Hollywood camera for that Times Square ball, they look bigger than life. They look huge.
Yeah.
And then you get here, and you're like... Oh, I actually kind of preferred it the other way.
Yeah.
What about you? Anywhere you've ended up, you'd be like, oh, so this is it, huh?
Well, so I remember the first time I experienced that was with the Statue of Liberty. And we went out on this ferry thing, and we went to look at it. And I kind of looked, and I was like, they're like, and here it is. And I'm like, where? I'm looking for this, you know, big, gigantic, green-looking statue. Where? Right. Oh, what? Huh? Oh, there. Oh, that's it? And I had the same kind of reaction you did. I was like, that is.
I suppose if you took a boat out there and got real close to it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we were pretty close, and I still was not overly impressed. But
what about you, Beardsley? You got any? You got any things that you were hyped up, and then you got there and were a little disappointed?
Not really. I haven't done a whole lot of traveling, so I haven't seen any special sights.
Well, I guess the moral of the story is you might not be missing out on much, but I'll say this. I am surprised. Now we just chat on New York City a little bit. I am surprised by a few things about New York.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I guess this is, I'll say the most obvious one. People here are way better dressed. I feel I'm constantly underdressed in a t-shirt and shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's dressed really nice, really, you know, nice shirts.
Hi there. How you doing? Welcome back.
Hi, sweetie. So you found the car. Wait, come back. You can come back. You found the car?
Yes, I walked all over town
to
talk to five different people.
Wait, put her on the mic. Hold on. Put her on the mic. So Hadia just got here. She just walked in, and she looks like she made it to the car, too. So how's the streets? Is it hot as hell out there?
No, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
But I did have to talk to five different people. And I only had to tip one of them.
Tipping's a big thing here.
Yeah.
We were just talking about the good things about New York, though. So you can't.
Everybody was very friendly. They
really?
Called up different people to try and find where my car was. One guy walked me all the way back to the hotel telling me my car was here. And I said, that's not very helpful. And then the concierge, I talked to the valet guy, somebody who looked like they spoke clear enough English. And they said, oh, no, go up the escalators. All the cars are parked up there.
Oh, yeah. So quick story here. we get here to New York, and we had been trying to figure out the parking situation at the hotel the whole way here. But the Hyatt's website is sort of basic bitch generic, and it's just sort of cookie cutter for all the Hyatts. And
it says there's paid parking. That's it.
Just says there's paid parking. So we think to ourselves, okay, well, probably a parking garage, you know, because I'm thinking like Seattle. And Hadid's looking on the website. She's checking on the website. Nothing. I'm like, okay, well, we'll just find the parking garage. We'll just drive around the block. I know it's New York. We'll just drive around the block. Yeah. It'll be fine. So we get here, and we do just that. We drive around the block, and of course we discover no parking garage because the Grand Hyatt Hotel is built on top of Grand Central Station. There are trains underneath us. There's no parking garage.
Yeah.
That's obvious. So we we pull up, and Hadid's like, go out there and just ask them where we're supposed to park.
And yeah, that was amusing.
And I'm like, I'm just going to leave you here on the street? Because we're just on the street. There's no, like, parallel parking spots or anything like that. So I step out, and I quickly realize that these are valets that are here. Mm-hmm. So I say, hey, we need to get our car valeted. Is that the best parking, or is there a parking garage?
Yeah.
It's like the only parking is valet.
And mostly via sign language and body language do we figure out that they mean to valet our car whether we want to or not.
Yeah, we have no choice.
And they're going to bring a luggage cart over, and we've been living out of our car for a week.
Yeah.
So it's not a pretty sight.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're basically just yanking shit out.
We're literally on the street of New York, probably one of the busiest streets in the States, and cars and police are driving around us, you know, blaring their horns, and we're trying to, in 30 seconds, figure out how to transfer 6 days of our life onto this luggage caddy.
What do we not need? Yeah. While everybody's watching us.
Yeah, everybody's just standing there waiting for us. And so I say to the guy, well, okay, what if I need something? He's like, oh, it's no problem. He gives me a piece of paper, and he says, here, and he underlines it, and he's got a pen in his hand, and he underlines the number. He says, you just call this number, and they'll bring you whatever you need.
Yeah.
So I go over to Dee and I say, okay, well, here's the number. We'll just get the stuff. We'll get up to the room. We'll relax because we've been driving for 6 days. And then if we forgot something, we'll call the number. Okay, okay. So she relaxes. I relax. We go into the hotel, and immediately I try to take my own luggage. But no. The guy, he's got to take the luggage for me.
He's got to touch my sweaty gym bag.
Yeah, he's got to touch all the stuff, and he's got to move it, and he brings it over to the concierge. Of course, he wants a tip, but I didn't have any cash at that point. So we get checked in. Check-in goes smooth, super fast. Go over to the concierge, and I tell him, okay, we're ready to go upstairs. And so he gets somebody who also begins to move our stuff and brings it up here. I'm like, do you have any cash? She's like, I don't know. I'm like, just give me the cash. You know, we're trying to have this conversation while we're walking behind this guy because it's awkward. Mm-hmm. And I don't want him to overhear us talking about how we're going to freaking tip this. So I tip the guy when he leaves. And I'm like, okay, good. I got my tipping in. I'm good. So then we get down to the concierge. I'm like, okay, well, we figured out what we need from our car. So how do we get that? And the guy is sort of dodgy about
it. He's like, no, you don't do that. No.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, what?
You want a car, $70. They bring a car to you.
$70 every time they bring something to you. Or they bring the car.
And that might not have been completely correct, but he was not clear about it. And it was obviously going to cost money and a fair amount of tipping.
And then he's like, oh, and then he leans in close. He does like one of these things. Like, you would have thought he was flirting with Hadid, but he was just leaning in close. And he's like, and he touches. He's like, I'll tell you something. And he touches her arm. You got to tip them a little bit. If you treat these guys right, they'll treat you right. You know, that's how this works.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, $70 to get my shit and I have to tip? I'm like, do I need my insulin? Do I need my insulin?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And one of the things we did that I really regret is because it was such a rush and I hadn't had time to even think about it, we left the tracker in the car because the tracker, you know, you're tracking the car. Well, everybody expected me to take the tracker with me. So people started going to where the car is parked at. And to be like, this isn't the hotel. And so then I got telegrams like, hey, man, you should think about just keeping the tracker in your backpack or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, yeah? Why is that? I'm like, maybe this guy's got a good idea. I'm like, why is that? Well, I showed up at the parking lot. And I thought it was the hotel and I had something for you. So I was just gonna say, even if you couldn't find it, you could have checked the tracker page because we still have eyes on where the car's at.
I went to where the tracker says it is, and it was not in the garage. And he called the number on the Hyatt, and they said, well, it's at the 42nd. I'm like, 42nd Street, that is the Hyatt. And he walks me all the way from his garage over to the Hyatt and says, your car is here. And I'm like, do I tip? I don't want to tip this guy. He hasn't really done anything significant. But I'm like, because I only have 20s. I'm like, how many 20s can I give out at this point? So I'm like, well, thank you. And I just bat my eyelashes a little and jump up and down a few times.
Let him take a peek.
Just let him take a peek and I just go. And then I find the most English-speaking person I can and I go, medication. I need medication out of my car, which is sort of true. I won't need it until tomorrow, but it's just, yeah.
Yeah, she's a diabetic.
And on top of that, I don't have the right shoes. I'm basically wearing the same damn outfit. So you guys watch the vlog. Do not judge me. I do not have any other clothes. They're in the car.
Yeah, that's one of the things we get here. And, like, everybody's like, oh, yeah, yeah, we watched the vlog. Yeah, and I'm like, okay, so that's kind of embarrassing because sometimes we put some shit in that thing.
So that guy walks me up the escalator to where we went before, and right outside the escalator, we didn't see that night. It's a parking garage out there, so like a whole other street up there. So we go up there, and he drops me off with some other younger guy. I'm like, sweet, this guy will do my bidding. And I got a video of it. He takes me inside the parking garage and into the car lift, and we go up the car lift, and then he's like, what kind of, like, I can't even prove that I have the car because now I can't find the ticket. I'm all flustered. And he's like, it's a gray Ford Focus. And we find it. He almost leads me to like an Escape. I'm like, well, like, what's in that car?
Yeah.
I'll take that one. And I'm like, it's jammed in the back, and I'm crawling in there grabbing stuff, and I'm like, what else can I get away with taking?
Right.
Even though it's not medication, I'm like, I can't bring my boots. Like, I can't just like start hauling out my, because I've just,
plus you gotta then you gotta
medication.
Pack meal that all the way back.
Mm-hmm. So I just grabbed a blanket so I won't complain. And
oh, you did?
Yeah. And insulin and
good
essentials.
Well, that's
and I tipped him
technically. Yeah.
George Jr. tipped him.
Wow. So there's New York for you. That's New York right there in a nutshell. If you really, once you know what you're doing, it's not so bad. But until you know what you're doing, you can get sort of caught flat-footed. And that valet thing definitely got us caught flat-footed.
Yeah.
Ramifications for days on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, lesson learned, I guess. I don't know if we'll ever be in this situation
then,
again, but lesson learned.
Basically, the $50 in essentials we went out and bought so that we would have our toiletries, so a brush and
yeah.
a comb and toothpaste and deodorant and a razor, like all of this stuff. And I'm like, do I buy socks? I'm like, do I just go to Walgreens and refill my prescriptions because I know my copay is $30, or do I pay the $70 to get them to bring it to me?
Right.
We're weighing all of these
the entire
things.
Time. We were always like, is that worth $70?
Yeah,
is
at this point, it practically is.
Yeah,
all combined.
I was actually starting to think it, but yeah. And then it became like a moral thing, like they weren't going to get my $70. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't going to cave. And so it's kind of awesome because you not only – this is the best of both worlds because you got the stuff and we didn't pay the $70.
Mm-hmm. Only 20.
Well, I guess that's good. All right. Thank you, sweetie. I appreciate it. That was good. There was a good update. So there you go. I could have told you what New York's like, but that's probably just the best example of what New York is like. Anyways, but I feel like if cost wasn't a factor, I feel like I could probably live here for a month. Maybe a month. What about you? You think you could live in New York? Could you live?
I could. We were actually talking about this the other day. I would be actually okay with, like, if I could rent an apartment right above Times Square so that everything I'd ever want to experience is right there, I think I could actually do, like, 6 months. I might, actually, in retirement or something like that. I might actually take, a couple months, and I might spend, like, 6 or 7 months in New York, maybe 6 or 7 months in California.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Just kind of go around and just kind of live. But again, if you're in New York, you just can't have a car.
No.
You just can't. It's just not practical. So you're walking. So if I'm going to have to walk everywhere, I want to be, a couple blocks away from B&H, a couple blocks away from, good restaurant, stuff like that. So I don't ever have to go anywhere. I just walk out of my apartment, go wherever I'm going to go.
Yeah, I agree. The perfect scenario would be if I could have brought Lady Jupes, which was never going to happen.
Yeah.
But if I could have brought Lady Jupes here, then I'd have all my stuff.
Yeah.
That'd have been nice.
Yeah, with all the spare parking outside, I can't imagine why you didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. So yeah, there you go. I guess that's the recap of being in New York. You want to talk about the rally for a little bit?
Yeah, we can.
Okay. Well, Beardsley, before we go, how are things going over in Seattle land? Like, are the lights still on? The roof still on the studio?
No, I'm actually podcasting from the driveway. The house burned down.
Good.
yeah.
Good. And Wes is coming over later today for a little Beard and Wes Unplugged action.
Indeed. As well as TechSnap, I think.
Well, we'll get to listen. That'll be nice. I gotta say, the Ubuntu rally, I was a little uncertain
Oh, really?
A little bit. Because, like, is it really a get-together and get work done, or is it, you know, an opportunity for everybody to just hang out? Because it seems like sometimes in a business, management has ideas and expectations.
Yes.
And then people get there, and they all get together. Well, you're in New York, you know.
Yeah.
what's your impression been of that? Do you think
I think it's been really incredible how much they've really gotten to work. I also think that as I sit in on some of these sessions and kind of listen to what these people are saying, I'm constantly impressed with and blown away by their level of insight and the level of thought that is going into these releases. Not just 17, like we talked about, but you know, making things in 1710 to plan for the LTS freeze in 1804, stuff like that is just like, I just sit there and I'm like, what did I just hear? Like, that's incredible. I can't believe you guys are you know, thinking of that.
You know, one of the things they did that shows you the kind of work that they're trying to get done, they had, they have these just unbelievable, off the charts, never have had these many bugs before, Wayland seg faults that keep coming into the bug tracker. And every time it shows up, it creates a duplicate bug because everybody submits a new one whenever you send back, and then they, you know, they have stuff on the back end to consolidate it. But I overheard that, like, it's the highest crash metric they've ever had for anything in Ubuntu. Like, Wayland is just crashing for a ton of people. So the gentleman that worked with them in Taipei on the fractional scaling, they flew him and are putting him up here at this event to help with those seg faults on Wayland right now.
Wow. Isn't that, see, that, and you know, it's funny too, because I think I screen kept and sent you the article, and somebody was saying, we have not seen this level of transparency and community involvement with Canonical in over 10 years. And the fact that they are doing that, that they took somebody else's display server, and then they are going to implement it, and then they are going to not only just implement it and say, well, hey, listen, we're using Wayland now, so you better fix it because this is not working. Yeah, they're not doing that. They're not just filing a bug. They are actively participating in fixing the problem.
Yeah.
That's really fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, getting the right people together. They have a Telegram group going. You can see some of them talking back and forth about the different things they're going to be trying to solve today. Like right now, as we record, a bunch of people are in the Snap room from different projects working on
stuff. Yeah, I was down there earlier today.
Yeah, I want to go back down there after we're done here.
Mm-hmm.
But the part I haven't really gotten to see is, like, the nightlife stuff, because we recorded last night around the time everybody broke from the hotel. You and I were recording Ask Noah, and then I just kind of got tired. We went out for a bit, met up with X-Men in the chat room, Xavier, super cool dude. He brought us some nice snacks, and then I went to bed. But you went out afterwards.
I did.
And what was that like?
Yeah, so I went out, hung out with Ikey, and hung out with Wimpy, and a couple of other people that were there. Actually, really interesting guy, Neil from the Fedora Project, actually does is responsible for Snapcraft on Fedora.
Yeah,
and again, having that level of insight, being able to sit down with the real movers and shakers in these communities, and listen to the Fedora guy tell me why he prefers snaps over Flatpaks, despite being a Fedora guy. And I mean, this is a guy who has a contributor status to the point that he can touch pretty much every package in Fedora except for the kernel. And so being able to sit down and talk with those guys and then hear how they interact. Of course, Ikey and I had a spirited discussion on Solus. And,
Really?
Yeah.
How did that go?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So, on a personal level, I think him and I have actually gotten to be pretty good friends, after a couple of hours. It's interesting because we have drastically different views and takes on certain things. Interestingly enough, though, we both kind of want the same end goal. And so being able to sit down and kind of hash that out, it really exemplified to me in a very big way about how things do not come across the same in text as they do in person. Things that would ordinarily be highly offensive and very problematic if it was just sent in text form comes off an entirely different way. And you start to pick up on personality styles, and that understanding of somebody's personality style helps you better interpret what it is you think, what they're trying to say to you.
Yeah, and, you know, Ikey's from a strange foreign land, too, so there's a huge cultural divide. Well,
Ireland.
Well, there is a legitimate difference. Like, they will more commonly, as they say, take the piss out of each other over there.
Oh, yeah.
Where not as common as a thing. Or, like, sometimes, like, buddies, groups of buddies will, like, be hard on each other. But, you know... They're a little, I think it flows a little more freely over there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yep.
So, yeah, there is a bit of that cultural difference, but no, it's not like a big deal.
Yeah. That was fun. It was it was real fun. And, you know, and so discussion was had and drinks were consumed and it was a good time.
Last.ting.com. Last.ting. L-A-S.ting.com. You go there because I haven't changed the URL yet, and it's the best way to support this show and get yourself a great deal. So Ting is mobile that makes sense. It's a smarter way to do mobile. Your average Ting bill is going to be $23 for a phone and like minutes, messages, and megabytes because it's $6 for the baseline, and it's just your usage on top of that. So it's whatever minutes, messages, and megabytes you use plus $6 for the line itself. You want three lines, you pay $6 for each line. It's just straight, easy, simple. And they have a really nice dashboard to manage it all. Super great customer service. No contracts, so there's no early termination fee. And they have nationwide coverage, and they have a CDMA and a GSM network, which means you can bring a lot of different devices, and they have a BYOD page. Or you can grab like a Ting SIM card for GSM, use that, and say you're traveling across the country and CDMA works better in some areas. You could use CDMA. Or you could be a maniac. Maybe you're a maniac and you have two phones. I mean, I don't know, but maybe you got two phones. And one's on Ting's GSM network and one's on Ting's CDMA network. And you're still paying less than you did when you had one of the big duopoly carriers. It's great. Great mobile.
Just out of curiosity, am I ever going to get you to live down this idea that I'm carrying two phones? Or that's just something you gotta keep bringing up? You gotta scold me on air? Yeah. Hey, I got a cool story for you.
Yeah,
Chris.
Okay.
So I got an email from a listener, and he said, love all the shows you guys do, and I'm going to be in the U.S. for a little bit, and I want to have a cell phone while I'm, you know, while I'm in the U.S., but I don't know how to go about that, and can I do the Ting or whatever, and I was able to say...
Do the Ting.
Well, actually, I was able to do them one better. I said, just give me your address. And I'll send you a SIM card.
You did?
Because I buy them by the 10-pack.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's easy for me to send it to him, and then he can log on to last.ting.com, and he just... in fact, for me, it's even easier because once you buy the SIM card, I just get it in a drop-down menu, and I just pick the thing. He'll have to type the number in, but then he'll have service for a month. And when he's done, throw it in the trash, leave, and it's done.
It's super simple. It's also a great way to get some of your, like... security devices or cameras that have SIM support, or like if you got a tablet that every now and then you want to have internet on it, or like you're going on a road trip and it just makes life easier with the kids to have a device that has internet from time to time.
Or you bought your son a cell phone for his birthday and he wants service while he's in the car and you're sick of hotspotting it. So, and you know, with Ting's dashboard, you can actually limit.
Mm-hmm.
As I can say, he gets 1 gig and then he can learn what it's like to actually throttle his own bandwidth.
Well, and not only that, but then it's also, I mean, there's other ways to do this, but it's also like sort of my sort of default way of knowing he's not going to spend the entire car ride on the tablet.
Right. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, how it worked out for me was he's like, Dad, I'm out of data. I need to use your hotspot. I'm like,
Oh, yeah. No, according to Dylan, it is, quote unquote, stupid that we don't have internet in the truck. And so this is the nice thing.
It is pretty stupid.
It is. I agree. And for $6, you know, why not, right? Because, again, it's I can use it too. And that SIM, guess what? You can move it around. It's pretty nice. So get started by going to last.ting.com. They'll take $25 off of a device. And if you bring a device, it'll give you $25 in service credit. And that'll probably pay for more than your first month because the average bill for one line is like, after everything's all said and done, like $23.
So, oh, that's, I would say, oh, is that, oh,
that's the average.
Oh, okay.
That's the average.
I was going to say, mine ain't never near that high. Yeah. My mom's never near that high. Yeah. My sister's is never near that high.
Yeah. No, that's just the average. So I obviously for like you and I and the beard, like the entire time we can be on Wi-Fi, we're generally on Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. I'm on Wi-Fi here in the hotel the entire time. It's great how many places have Wi-Fi. Even just traveling over here, even in like some of the most podunk places, more and more places have Wi-Fi, and that is great when you're traveling. You can load up on your shows and stuff like that. And if you can just if you're just a little savvy, Ting can really work for you. And that's why I think it's a great fit for our audience. All right, I said enough. I just I want you guys to consider it, and it's a great way to support the show. Last.ting.com. They have some GNOME developers here, and I'm forgive me on the numbers here, but they're working on a snap diet. And they're talking like taking Snap packages from. You like that?
I do.
I can't.
Whoopi liked it too.
Oh yeah,
he said he was stealing it.
Oh yeah, that's right. You were there for that. I wasn't gonna out him on that. I was gonna let him have it. So they have taken. So you remember this then? So tell me if correct me if I'm wrong. I thought I was telling you. So they've taken like they were just experimenting with gedit. Like mm-hmm. you wouldn't really need gedit snapped. But mm-hmm. let's say you did want gedit snapped, mm-hmm. which it is a Flatpak. Mm-hmm. They took the former snap of like 23 megabytes mm-hmm. and got it down to something like 300 kilobytes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge reduction, and that's in a lot of the packages. So that's one of the things that they've done here this week. Is that's one of the key criticisms of snap packages is the size, and they've really cut that down.
So you know what? Another thing that they're doing that I think is really cool. I don't think they've actually gotten approval for this yet, but it's very very close. Ubuntu Mate is removing the calculator application, and they are going to replace it with a snapped version of the calculator application, because that will be the first example of a snap shipped by default. If it works, and they're really what they're going to do is they're going to test their backend infrastructure uh-huh. to see yeah. how it can handle when it all of a sudden, boom, hits everyone that downloads the ISO has the snap, and can updates be pushed, and does that not break anything? If that works, then they are going to start shipping snaps by default in 18.04.
Wow.
So, and again, this is what I'm talking about, that level of insight of being able to look back and say, okay, how do we do this? Well, Ubuntu Mate has a drastically lower user base than Ubuntu proper, so we can test the calculator application here, which nobody really cares about.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
We'll test it over here, and if it works okay in a small way,
yeah.
in a non-important, then we put it in important apps, you know, at
and
scale.
Work it up.
And scale it up, yeah.
That's an interesting idea. Good way to test that, actually.
Hmm.
Interesting times. It's good to be here during the sort of beginning of a lot of this. The other thing that's, I would say, unique and kind of like a background radiation to this event, but not like an important thing, but just like background radiation, is this is the first big Canonical event since they cleaned house, they laid a bunch of people off, they slimmed down, they refocused the company. This is the first time that they've all gotten together. And, it's by several people now been described to me as it feels like, to no disrespect to anybody that was previously in Canonical,
mm-hmm.
but it feels like a bunch of rock stars are all getting together for the first time.
All the A players.
Yeah, all the A players are getting together, and it's just A players in the room now. Not that the other people weren't A players, but it's just those areas of Canonical aren't around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the areas that are around and they've trimmed down to are, when you meet people, it's like the stuff that these people are responsible for is just mind-blowing, the amount of work.
Yeah,
this guy's responsible for Compiz and Wayland and fractional scaling and GDM hack, like just this whole
yeah.
list of stuff. And
it's
like,
yeah,
wow,
yeah.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, it is.
So it's been cool to see all of that. Yeah. So I'll have more in the vlog, and we'll probably talk more about it in Linux Unplugged and probably ask Noah.
Mm-hmm.
But this is day two right now as we're sitting here recording this show at the Ubuntu Rally. It's been pretty good.
I've enjoyed it.
Yeah,
definitely worth the trip.
We're going to be here all day today, and we're going to be here for a little bit of tomorrow and then heading out. So it's just a little bit left. We're like in a midway point right now. Patreon.com/JupiterSignal. We would really appreciate the support. Not only is it a way to keep the show's balance, so it's content versus advertising, it's also a way to keep our Northern Star pointed towards the audience. So that as long as that Patreon is a relevant funding source business-wise for us, we're going to have to make that client happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's truly why you're seeing Patreon take off and other crowdfunding models.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do it for e-bagging, but if you really look at the business model, you want your media outlet, whatever company is creating content for you, be it blog posts or podcasts or videos, you want their priority to be the audience. You want to be the client, essentially, not the advertiser.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's obvious why. And that's one of the main goals we have with our Patreon at patreon.com/JupiterSignal. It's from a business revenue standpoint. Hard numbers keep our priority the audience, and you can help us there. And that just keeps the content oriented always towards the audience. But more than that right now, as Noah and I are sitting in a hotel room that costs me $475 a night. Now, Noah is going half in on it with me to help Jupiter Broadcasting defer the cost. But that's just one part of being here in New York and being here to cover an event like the Ubuntu Rally. And I hope that the audience will find value in us coming away with interesting insights and experience and understanding. One of the things that's remarkable to be here for right now, if you think about it, for a couple of former co-hosts of the Linux Action Show, and now we have, you know, these new shows that talk about Linux, and we are here at the moment development is actually starting on 1804
right.
LTS, which could be one of the most important versions of Ubuntu ever released in its entire history.
Yep.
And we're here the day that development started, watching the people do that work. That is the kind of insight that I hope will be valuable for our shows for ages. And relationships that we're building here will be valuable for our shows. And the only way we could come here and do this real type of reporting and talk to these people is from the funding on our Patreon. And we had to do it on a shoestring budget, but we were able to make it happen. Now, wouldn't it be great if we could do even more? If it didn't have to be such a grind, if it didn't have to be, well, if I didn't have to ask Noah to help pay for half of it. I want to get there not through sponsoring, not through advertising if possible, but through crowdfunding at patreon.com/JupiterSignal. I don't know if that's necessarily the answer, but I sure hope it is. And I'd love to get people to help us if they can afford it just a little bit, patreon.com/JupiterSignal.
So as a patron myself, one of the things I always find in return is in addition to helping, you know, create the content, I also get, you know, you give so much sneak insights into what's happening with the network, future things that are going to be happening, all of that stuff. You know, I learn about good headphone amps and what dials do what.
I'm playing with them right now. Sorry about that.
All of that stuff comes in the Patreon, and I get the, you know, I just get a little email, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's kind of cool. And you know, I think they get first dibs on, you know, where you're going to be and where the traveling plans are. So when I'm here,
so there's this. I don't know if there was this moment. I don't know if it's going to make it in the vlog, but. We're going like hardcore. Noah has like a need. He has like an urge for Shake Shack. gotta go to Shake Shack. And so he's text messaging family members. He's looking it up on Google. He's trying to get like the lowdown on Shake Shack. And we get there. We finally find this Shake Shack.
And then I bailed.
Sure enough, if he didn't bail the moment we finally got there because he found something else, just after all that effort and like going through Grand Central Station, finding this place, going through peak rush hour of Grand Central Station.
Okay, to be fair, tell everyone what it was I found so they can understand why I bailed on Shake Shack.
The Indian food that's sitting right there on the table. He found it at a fast food Indian restaurant, which legitimately we all agreed was a good way to go. So there's moments that I've captured that I don't think really will make it into any show, but I'm going to take moments like that that are just fun for us to have, and I don't want to throw them away completely, and maybe I'll post some of those for the patrons if I have time,
because
there's just stuff that we've collected like that. This is such a huge trip. There's just stuff that isn't going to make it anywhere, but still fun, and why not have a little exclusive content for the patrons?
Yeah.
Patreon.com/JupiterSignal.
But see, you guys forgot the most important part. It gets you out of the studio so I can podcast with no pants on.
That's totally worth it right there. You know, one of the things that really pisses me off about this room, though? I mean, for 470-something a night, you'd think I'd be able to kill myself. You know?
How do you kill yourself in a hotel room?
Huh?
What are you talking about?
Jump out the window. I mean, I'm on the 29th floor, dude.
Oh, okay. Hold on, I'm confused. How does an expensive hotel keep you from jumping out the window?
Well, they have these suicide prevention windows where they open backwards, essentially.
Okay, yeah. They only want to open a little bit, so you can just get a little airflow.
And just from the top, Just like, a crack. It's just a crack.
Right. Yeah, I call them anti-photography windows because you can't not shoot through the glass.
Yeah, they even have nubbins, like rubber nubbins on each side that prevent it from coming down. So it opens from the top, and it swings down, and then it hits these nubbins, so you can basically get an arm out the window, but you can't kill yourself.
No.
And, you know, who are they to decide? I mean, I know, I'm sorry about the inconvenience on the street, but, you know, maybe it's more than just that factor here, people. Like, I just feel like in a world where we don't even let people kill themselves, we don't let people decide what they put in their bodies, we don't let them decide how much they put in their bodies, I mean, like, at what point are we going to stop pretending like we have control over everybody's aspect of their life?
So,
literally, how much more fundamental does it get than from trying to prevent somebody from taking their own life and from preventing what they put in their own body?
This is an interesting topic because essentially, so it comes down to this, basically. On one hand, you want to give people free choice. And on the other hand, you eventually wind up with people that aren't capable of making free, you know, like, if, you know, obviously if they're you know, mentally incapacitated or something like that. So we have to draw
a line. There's a solution for that.
We have to draw a line somewhere and say, this is where people need help, not we just need to let them make their choice, because if they were in the right mindset, or if they had help, they would no longer want to kill themselves.
Mm.
And that's, I think, where it gets really dicey. I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Beard. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, isn't it also kind of the same thing the other way around, though? Because if you go and you kill yourself, then you're inconveniencing someone else and making them clean up the mess that you just made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I grant you. I mean, I'm sorry I ruined their day. I'm sorry, my
street
death.
Cleaner out there, right?
My death ruined their day. It's a little rough for them. I apologize. Yeah, I mean, I'll grant you that jumping out the window isn't the best way. It's not the most, like, me wouldn't kill myself that way, personally.
Yeah.
Never would, because of the amount of inconvenience. It would, when and if I ever kill myself, it would be done in a way that would try to minimize exposure and impact to the people around me. So probably, like, driving off a cliff or something. That would be really the ideal.
Would just nobody would know what happened? Or
yeah. Go out in a mystery, dude.
You know,
I wonder pretty if, cool, like, though, dude.
Yeah.
I wonder if, like, someday, as a form of voluntary population control, if there will be some kind of suicide test where you can prove that you're mentally stable, but you still want to kill yourself.
So this
Oregon
is a thing.
Has that, right?
So that is a thing in Oregon.
That's different, though, because that involves, like, if you have medical issues.
Yeah. But see, I'm not even talking about this to make light about suicide. I'm legitimately curious to know what you guys think about this notion that you could control all of these things. Like the idea that you can control drug consumption is obviously false.
Right.
Just look at the meth problem. Look at the jails that are full of people. The war on drugs is everyone except for the federal government considers it a total disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that known, and the fact that we know you can't really stop someone from doing something to their own body if they choose to, be it cutting, drug consumption, too much sugar, too much fat,
right,
insane exercise, fasting for days, like whatever people want to do to their body, they are going to do it, because the one thing they have governance over is their own body.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that too, accepting that as basically fact, why do we still try to control it?
I don't know, because everywhere I've gone, I'm not able to get a 32-ounce soda.
Yeah, that's a good here in New York.
Yeah,
that's a good example.
But it's just one of those things. It, you know, look at what I did, Chris. Tell everyone what happens every restaurant we go to. What do I do?
You get two Cokes.
I order two Cokes. Yeah. I order two bottles of Coke because I can't get one large Coke.
Yeah.
So I order two smaller ones and then I drink them both. So
exactly.
This idea,
which ends up actually being more, because that one right there is. That is
24 ounces, so it's 48 total.
Yeah.
I just want, really, 32 would be
good. Yeah, so you end up drinking more.
But, so, actually, look at it, though. I mean, you know, I don't drink the second. So, really, I know what I want to put into my own body. And so, to your point, we try to, this futile effort of trying to control what somebody can put into their body or what somebody can do to their body, and it flops.
I feel like there is an unwillingness to abandon something that doesn't work.
Yes, that's true. The So, Minneapolis, where you and I met, they put in this fancy light control system, you know, the green light lets you go on the interstate, that kind of thing. MNDOT looked at it and said, after they put in, spent all this millions of dollars on it, they said, yeah, it's really not helping. So then a bunch of people said, well, can we just turn it back off? Because it's kind of irritating having to wait for this, you know, green light to go if it's not actually helping decrease congestion on the interstate. They said, well, we already spent all the money on it, so we'll just leave it in place. So these lights that have no meaningful effect on the decongestion of traffic are now put into inconvenience people. And like you said, we've decided because it's there, well, why take it? Why should we undo all of the drug, you know, laws and stuff that are on the books? I mean, they're already there.
You know, I, on my way out here, was listening to an audiobook, and there's a really interesting study, and I don't have anything to cite because it's just in the book, but the book is well-researched, and it talks about that... This is an unbelievable statistic. You're not even going to believe this when I tell you it. So prepare yourself for something that's going to seem unbelievable. But they have data that goes back to the Blitz in World War II to Hurricane Katrina. They have data that spans disasters of all kinds, natural disasters, Germans bombing the shit out of Britain, like just whatever. They have...
Yeah.
They have... This is an unbelievable... I have to couch this so heavily. during these crazy ass times of horrible destruction of society, psychiatrists and psych wards see a zero rate admittance. People stop seeking, like, they stop submitting themselves to, like, psych wards. They stop going to the crazy house. They stop going to the shrink. People that are going to the shrink currently at record numbers every time in these major disasters start canceling their appointments and stop going. And people report feeling significantly better that were troubled before the disaster. And this data, even so, back back when the Germans were bombing the shit out of London, they had survey crews, volunteer survey crews of the community that would go around and do surveys of people and ask how are they doing, what are they feeling, what's going on, how's your life, and they documented the shit out of while they're getting blitzed to hell. And so this data is really profound. Like, this is, the book is Tribes. You can look it up. It's really good. And their fundamental premise is that during these times, the normal class structure and society, like, hierarchy completely goes away. And a new immediate temporary communal structure forms where everybody's on an equal footing, helping each other out, and the success of one individual is dependent on the success of people around them. Like, so picture Irma right now, like that devastation from Irma. People will often, after it's over, actually talk nostalgically about that aspect of it. You know, there's total devastation with the homes and people's family lives and property. And that's horrible. But the but when you interview them, people, it's the same with vets. When you talk to vets, some of them miss wartime, not because of the atrocities of war, but because that class structure sort of replaced with something completely different, and there's a certain kind of bonding that happens. And we're walking down the streets here of New York, and you're just stepping over people sleeping on the street. Or, you know, there's stairs, there's steps, and there's just people sprawled out with all the shit that they own. Just all over the place, in boxes and stuff.
Or sleeping on it.
You know, so when you look at, that window right there. They're trying to prevent me from killing myself, and they're trying to fix the wrong problem.
Yeah, well, actually, so here, really, what you're trying to say is they are treating the symptom, not the actual problem. So instead of worrying about somebody getting the decision of somebody trying to take their own lives, let's try to fix the reason why they are trying to take their own lives to begin with.
This book also talks about in the Native American cultures, there was this sort of continual tribal, obviously.
So if you haven't read Seth Godin, by the way, the book he's talking about, Tribes, is one of my favorite books. Absolutely fantastic
and
book.
In the book, they talk about what was happening more and more than I think we really understand, is that Westerners would sort of start adopting the tribal life. Like, they would be integrated. Like, Gone with the Winds is like a thing that was happening back then. Like, that movie is about something that was actually happening. And there's no instances, really, of that happening at any scale of Native Americans adopting Western society. And I think it's because of those same dynamics that we struggle with today. And you can see it when you walk down the streets here of New York. It's really weird. And so, yeah, that's what I think about when I see that window and the fact that it tries to prevent me from killing myself, or the fact that they have these rules that make you buy two Cokes at once because that's what you're going to do anyways.
And, you know, the sad thing is, what it comes down to, at least with the window there, is probably just a function of insurance, right? I mean, really, when you come down to it, I mean, if you actually think about what actually came down to, is there some yuppity-up sitting inside of an office, and he said, Mr. Yuppity-up, our insurance premium will drop by, you know, $15,365 a month if we install these new anti-suicide prevention window things in all of the rooms. And he went, oh, okay, well, what's the cost of those that's less than that. Let's go ahead and do it. Sadly, that's what it takes for anything to change, is you gotta affect someone's bottom line.
You're probably right. You are probably right.
You have any thoughts, Beard?
Well, I mean, on the other hand, there's also the fact that in this case, treating the symptom is probably a lot simpler than trying to treat the problems, because, like, there's an infinite amount of reasons that somebody would want to kill themselves.
But does that not, is that not kind of like saying you're miserable and would prefer to end your own life than continue to be miserable, so we're going to make sure you don't end your own life, and we also can't really solve a problem of why you're miserable, so we, I mean, isn't that almost worse?
I think it's more of like a delay tactic. If you prevent somebody from ending their life, you have a longer amount of time to maybe help them eventually.
Okay. I guess that kind of makes sense. I guess I would feel better about it.
It's a complex problem.
Yeah, I guess I'd feel better about it if I think if we saw more, you know, an active effort.
Mental health stuff?
Yeah,
anything that worked.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
So one of the things I have done just about every time I've come to New York City is I always have to stop at B&H Photo and Video. For those of you who don't know, B&H Photo and Video is probably the largest store in the world for to buy professional audio and video equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the very first
time... And everything around it now, including VR and computers.
So the very first time I ever got to go to B&H was actually a really special trip because I had just ordered my very first professional video camera, HMC-150 from Panasonic, and it cost me just about everything I had in the world, and I had bought it, and the company I was working for at the time was sending me to Pennsylvania to get trained on a specific software system, and I knew that B&H was, you know, just a train right away from Pennsylvania, so I said, I'm going to be there in 3 days. Instead of shipping it, could I just come pick it up? And they said, yeah. So my very first trip, I actually took a train into New York City, got to go down and, you know, and pick up my new baby. And then I got to play with it, of course, you know, while I was in the hotel room and stuff like that, take it back to Grand Forks. And every time after that, I've always kind of come here and occasionally I'll pick some things up. So it was Chris's B&H Cherry. Now you've ordered from B&H,
over
the years.
Yeah.
And if you don't know about B&H, a lot of the people that work there, they are Jewish. And not just like practicing Jews, but they're like full-on Orthodox Jew. And they take their convictions very, very seriously. And so there are certain days that you cannot order things.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain times of the year that you cannot order things. And they don't care what capital that represents. They stick that closely to their beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very interesting store. And there is nothing... there's two things. First of all, there's nothing you can buy in that store that is of poor quality.
Right.
They only stock high-end stuff. And the second thing is there's pretty much nothing you could ever want in the professional audio video world that doesn't exist in that store. So Chris and I mean, we're getting lost. I mean, he's looking at tablets. I'm looking at audio interfaces.
Yeah.
We're both looking at microphones.
And
we're
lights.
Looking at tripods and lights and cameras and video cameras and SD card readers. And the store is so massive that they almost have duplicate sections. I mean, they have how many different places could you find, like, memory cards and USB readers?
I mean, we went to at least three or four that we thought would be it. I think when you go in there, you are sort of overwhelmed with stuff. Like, it's just a ton of stuff. But the first thing you'll notice is there's a rattling overhead.
Yes.
And like a grinding noise. And you look up and they have a conveyor, not quite belts because they're rolling pins.
Right.
They have conveyor rolling pins of baskets of stuff that people have ordered that are being brought up from inventory. And when you go up to the table, like you go up to the camera table, and the guy's behind a booth, and he's got a computer, and, you know, he's got all the stuff behind him, and you're standing there. The table, the booth, is made of glass.
Mm-hmm.
It's transparent. And there's actually conveyor belt in there.
Right.
And you see stuff coming through the booths.
Yes.
And you see, then it goes up, and it goes up a conveyor, and it gets then into an elevator, and it gets then moved over to another belt, and then it ends up at the pickup area.
It's really something else. You know, the other thing, Chris, that I noticed is those guys... They are so knowledgeable about all of the equipment that is in store. I don't know if you noticed, but like we're standing there, and I, you know, some things I was just genuinely curious about, but then other times I'd be like, I bet this guy won't know this, and I would ask him. I'd say, you know, is that the X100 or X200? He with you know, it's not. He's not reading a model. He just looks at my. That's the 100.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
I was just standing next to the guy selling gimbals.
Yeah.
And I got a great gimbal tip just standing there. I'm like, oh, damn, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, they are true testaments to their profession. It's really interesting to be inside of a store like that because you go, most of us, the best we have is like Best Buy.
Yeah.
And you go and walk in there and you're like, well, I want a camera. And the guy picks up the box, he turns and says, well, this, let me tell you about this camera. This has a 15.4 megapixel. Pixely, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like they have no idea. And, but these guys are—they're true experts. So it's, you know, and if you ever need advice about something, then too, you can go to them and say, "Hey, listen, I am interested. I need a video camera, and I want to shoot vlogs.
Right, right.
What can I do?
Well, vlogs.
Whatever.
I know. I'm not saying I created the word.
I want to shoot video weblogs. And they say, okay, if you want to shoot video weblogs, what you need is you need a video weblog camera.
Bitch, I
and
hate
then you need a video weblog gimbal, and here's the best video weblog camera and the best video weblog gimbal. And they have all of that stuff right there for your video weblogs.
Weblog, yeah. Oh, you bastard. No, you bastard.